This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
While I currently do have discretion to pursue death sentences, I have determined that doing so is not in the best interest of this community or the best interest of justice.
State Attorney Aramis Ayala causes a firestorm over her stance on the death penalty.
Whether you agree with the state attorney's decision or not, she does have the discretion to do what she did.
Senator Randolph Bracey gets caught on both sides of the issue. The big reveal from behind the curtains at this year's Prescott's, Senator Aaron Bean's secret appropriation to a friend.
When it comes to back dealing, there's a lot of tricks I've tried. Tell the press we're open, then tuck some extras on the side.
Speaking of Prescott's, FloridaPolitics.com publisher Peter Schorsch weighs in.
You appreciate the effort of these guys that are doing all this rehearsal, but like the press corps itself, it's like hanging on to the last century. It needs to modernize.
All that and more coming up on episode 98 of The Rotunda.
Everybody raise a glass. Stick it up Rick Scott's ass. Everybody raise the brass of the Speaker of the House.
While I currently do have discretion to pursue death sentences, I have determined that doing so is not in the best interest of this community or the best interest of justice.
A newly elected state attorney in Orlando has caused a firestorm over the issue of the death penalty.
Under my administration, I will not be seeking death penalty in cases handled in my office.
Florida State Prosecutor Aramis Ayala has been removed from a high-profile cop killing case following a swift executive order from Governor Rick Scott.
Let me be very clear, however. I will continue to hold people who do harm to this community accountable for their actions.
Ayala refused to charge Markeith Lloyd with the death penalty for allegedly shooting and killing Lieutenant Deborah Clayton a week after police say he murdered his ex-girlfriend.
Florida's death penalty has been the cause of considerable legal chaos, uncertainty, and turmoil. An analysis of death penalty must be pragmatic. It must be realistic and not simply theoretical, impulsive, or emotional.
Scott first asked Ayala to recuse herself from the case. When she refused, he issued an executive order to remove her.
Well, he definitely has the authority to do that. But I think that whether you agree with the state attorney's decision or not, she does have the discretion to do what she did.
That's Democratic State Senator Randolph Bracey, who's found himself in a pretty awkward position. On one hand, he helped revive Florida's death penalty after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional.
The justices say the system gives too much power to judges and not enough to juries to decide capital sentences.
Florida is one of only three states in which a recommendation of death does not have to be unanimous and is considered only a recommendation, giving the judge full authority to decide.
So the courts said that's unconstitutional. But Bracey sponsored the bill that Governor Scott recently signed into law calling for a unanimous verdict for a sentence of death. But during his guest appearance on Orlando's public radio station, WMFE, Bracey appears to agree with Ayala's findings.
The death penalty is unevenly applied, and research shows that depending on what circuit you're in, more or less likely will determine if you're to get the death penalty or not. So I think the legislature does need to look at our death penalty scheme and find ways to make it better.
But the U.S. Supreme Court gave the legislature the opportunity to do just that. Those issues could have been addressed in the bill that the governor just signed. Instead, the legislature focused on just the narrow issue to resume the death penalty like business as usual. Here is Intersection host Matthew Petty and Senator Bracey.
I wonder, though, I mean, if you think there are still issues with the death penalty and it does need another look, what was your rationale for sponsoring this bill to get things back on track?
Well, one, I'm the criminal justice chairman in the Senate, so the Senate president asked me, being the leader on criminal justice issues in the Senate, to sponsor the bill. That was one reason. And so, you know, my thinking was, listen, you know, the will of the legislature was to have the death penalty in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
So whether agree with it or not, I decided to take the lead to at least make it a little bit better. And I thought unanimity makes it better. And so that's why I decided to sponsor it.
Governor Scott released a statement explaining why he removed State Attorney Ayala from the case. He said, quote, "Ayala has made it clear that she will not fight for justice, and that is why I am using my executive authority to immediately reassign the case to State Attorney Brad King." Scott went on to say, "These families deserve a state attorney who will aggressively prosecute Markeith Lloyd to the fullest extent of the law, and justice must be served." A number of reactions flowed in. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi said Ayala's decision sends a dangerous message to residents and visitors of Orlando. She added, quote, "It is a blatant neglect of duty and a shameful failure to follow the law as a constitutionally elected officer." Meanwhile, Ayala also received praise from defense attorneys like Stephen Lawrence, who was also a guest on Intersection.
"I thought it was bold, and actually I applaud her for it, because I think as criminal defense lawyers, we believe the death penalty should go away. And I think that recognition by a prosecuting attorney in the state of Florida is certainly good news."
What about folks, though, who say, look, this is we need justice for our, you know, for our loved ones, and this is the only way we're going to get it?
Well, for those people, I would tell you, go to Rayford, go to a 6x6 cell, and go stay in it for 40 or 50 years. Mm-hmm. It is extreme punishment. Now, maybe they're not going to lose their life, but being confined to a cell, 6x6 cell, for the rest of your life is certainly punishment. I have had a number of clients that would tell you that that's the worst. It's more of a punishment than death.
In her own statement, Ayala said she would follow any lawful order from the governor. She also went on to say, quote, "I offered to have a full conversation with him regarding my decision about the death penalty. He declined to explore my reasoning," end quote. This is a fascinating case study on the application of criminal justice across Florida. While a number of public officials are expressing outrage over Ayala's decision, there's very little reaction coming out regarding the state attorney's office in Miami-Dade and their decision not to file any criminal charges in the controversial death of a mentally ill prison inmate, Darren Rainey. That is a case to watch. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Visit RotundaPodcast.com. Follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast. A good scandal is part of the political process. It gives reporters something to cover. Consultants make money trying to cover it up, and they often offer a window into the inner workings of how things get done in Tallahassee. The latest scandal comes courtesy of reporter Eric Sarkissian, who broke a story about State Senator Aaron Bean helping a friend's business obtain $1 million hidden in the current state budget that was processed during the last legislative session. But here is the awkward part for those who attended the press kits. Bean shared the stage with Eric, and only a select few knew the story was about to drop.
I can't tell anybody.
So can you imagine? Bean, who's known for his warm and joyful disposition,
yeah. Everybody always kids me that I'm a game show host,
kept his composure under the bright lights of Tallywood. Well, that's what I'm calling it. Alongside the man that would make the brightest of smiles lose its luster. We'll talk more on that later.
Thanks so much, everybody, for coming out tonight to support our really excellent cause, which is the Barbara L. Fry Scholarship. It supports journalism students who are from Florida and who attend Florida colleges and universities.
This year's press kits was an absolute delight. This review will come as a shock for those who are not familiar with the sometimes annual tradition, because you're likely a newbie walking in expecting these journalists to put on a Broadway-style performance. But these people barely have time to eat lunch, yet alone write, produce, and rehearse and memorize these sometimes funny skits.
Will we soon have a deal? Gosh, I don't know when.
The night is all about the Florida Capitol Press Corps, poking fun at Florida lawmakers. It's kind of like the sketch comedy show In Living Color meets Saturday Night Live, with hopes of being like the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Anyway, it's a great place to be. One of the hottest tickets in town. The press finds humor in their daily grind. It's actually a little window into a journalist's safely guarded personal opinion on the big issues and the people they cover. But the people they cover also punch back. This year, the House and Senate made hilarious rebuttal videos, but the members of the Florida cabinet pulled out and didn't offer any explanation as to why they couldn't finish their video production.
Republicans are here to stay.
This year's theme, the Crony Awards. Senator Aaron Bean had a role as a game show host during the live skit. Did Senator Bean personally profit from a secret appropriation for a longtime friend? Eric's reporting revolved around email exchanges with Bean and his friend Nassau County tax collector John Drew, who helped build a pilot program for mental health assessments. One email from Drew to Bean reads, "I am truly looking forward to this partnership and finally, everyone making money together." Bean defended his involvement in helping the project by calling it constituent support.
Interview, like, so you have this reputation with Gift of Gab, and you're doing this. You did a great job here, so.
Yeah, everybody always kids me that I'm a game show host, so
yeah.
That's when Tia Mitchell called and said, "Hey, would you do this?" And so I say, "Yeah," and then she says, "Don't tell anybody." So I can't tell anybody. My wife knew that I was in, so, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
So what was your highlight looking at the whole press kits? Like, what sticks out for you?
The cut for me was looking at Jack Latvala and him giving me the thumbs up, only he wasn't using his thumb. He was using a different finger. So all in good nature fun. So
tell me about that skit of which roof were you guys on?
Oh, we were.
With the bricks.
We were actually on the roof of the Senate, the Senate rooftop. We went up there, and so they did some great magical editing. They didn't let us go near the edge, so with that, it worked out well. But that was a lot of fun, wasn't it? That was a lot of fun. And yelling the F word at Mrs. Gaynor four times I apologize each time. I said, "I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I have to yell this word at you." But it was fun. It was actually very funny.
It was good.
Anyway, that's an example of all the serious work behind the fun and games coming from both sides during press skits, which again was a lot of fun this year. Here's reaction from Senate President Joe Negron and Senator Lisbeth Beniquista.
I thought the House and Senate videos were very funny, and I thought Aaron Bean was a great guy doing a game show.
Yeah, what did you think? How did you like it? What's your highlight?
Oh, it was very funny. When you see people step out of character like the president did to raise money for a good cause, it's always a good event. And, you know, we have to celebrate the spirit of raising money for others.
All right. Good job.
Thank
good to see you guys.
This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes. The Rotunda is supported by listeners like you, and we welcome your generous sponsorship. All you have to do is visit rotundapodcast.com, contact yours truly, and you'll be all set. As always, thanks for your support. We have a special guest returning to the program, and that is none other than new media mogul Peter Schorsch, a man of many titles, political operative, blogger, but he's better known as publisher of FloridaPolitics.com, Influence Magazine, Sunburn, and the latest from Washington called The Delegation.
So, Peter Schorsch, welcome back to The Rotunda. How are things?
It's good. It's great to be back on The Rotunda. I think every time we tape, we're in a bar, which I like I like the flexibility of podcasting.
You were here in town, and you were here at the one of the biggest event that we always look forward to.
Right.
It's not quite the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's Florida's version.
Right.
It's the Prescott's. So what did you make of last night's, event?
I thought it's good. I think I keep saying to people, press kits is so important, like fighting in hockey is. These guys that are in the Capitol Press Corps, they need to blow off steam about what they really think. And if they don't, then they'll get a little chippy. And so I think it's actually good for the process that Mary Ellen Klass and Basquet and all the reporters get to blow off a little steam. I thought there were some real big stars. Tia Mitchell is just... I mean, she's in the wrong career. She needs to be in the touring version of Hamilton. Michael Auslan with Tampa Bay Times was really good. So was Jessica Bakeman. I think what killed it was the great video from the Florida Senate. That was a play on Old School. But then my criticism is it seemed really anachronistic in a lot of ways. It feels like Saturday Night Live during the Joe Piscopo days. Like, they really need to get... They need to get modern. They need to get like some more social media interaction. They need more videos. There was a lot of times where it was like crickets. And so you appreciate the effort of these guys that are doing all this rehearsal. But like the press corps itself, it's kind of, it's like hanging on to the last century. It needs to modernize.
Well, my experience when I used to participate in it, that seemed to be the theme, the expectation, like, oh, our portion is just going to be, it was dry, and that was okay, and it hasn't changed much.
It hasn't, except for who's not going to it. You know, the governor wasn't there. The big lobbying firms are not there anymore. It seemed like basically a crush of 22-year-old legislative aides, who I don't even know if they get all those jokes as much, and so I wish... The press corps could, remember, it's a fundraiser too. Yeah. So I wish it could return to the days when you'd have some tables, you know, sponsored by and so forth. I mean, let's not be afraid to make money for a good cause here. And there's been infighting in the press corps about that. I'd like to see them go back to that, you know, selling some of those tables and stuff like that.
I was impressed with the choreography. They stepped up the game on that. Well, overall, little things. The video segments from both the House and Senate, there were shorter segments, none of these long bits, enough that they can even like put that on social media and have it make the rounds and have a second life. But the shorter segments and the choreography, they seem to up their game in that regards. But it's still, to you, they could do more.
I think, well, let's give credit again where credit's due. It's Tia. I mean, from what I talked to the reporters of mine that were working on the skits, and they just said, you know, this was the Tia Mitchell show in terms of she really puts her heart and soul into that. So I got to give her credit. You know, I hate to say it this way, but unfortunately, Tia can't do impressions of Richard Corcoran, and that makes sense. What they need to do is just do the Hamilton of the press corps and just realize that, you know, an African-American female can play Joe Negron if she wanted to, just like Lin-Manuel Miranda can play Alexander Hamilton. So I'd love to see that the next time around. Let Tia do an impression of Rick Scott.
Yeah. So was your team participating? Did anyone at Florida Politics participate in the press skits?
Yes. Roseanne Dunkelberger was involved in a bunch of the skits. It's kind of an interesting topic because I know that they don't want... my help. They don't really want any of the publishers' helps, but they particularly don't want mine. But they will allow my reporter.
Why is that?
You know, I don't. I still think that they think I don't know. I'm nouveau riche or something like that. I'm the outsider. You know, I'm not a traditional legacy newspaper, and so I mean, I know that there was some heated discussions about, you know, us and Sunshine State News and whether or not they'd let Brian Burgess into the event. And I think that's what they need to do. They need Andy Samberg, to go back to the SNL reference. They need the Andy Sambergs of the press corps to get in there to make it a better event.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think next year will be like? This is reaching into the bags, and I'm probably asking the wrong person. But what do we do with this crop of new media that's here generating news and information? Should you have a place at the press kits that many of the people there in the audience subscribe to and follow?
You know, I'll be honest, there wasn't a person that I talked to last night that didn't say, hey, why weren't you up there, or why don't you do this, or when are you coming up with your own press kits? And I gotta tell you, maybe we will come up with our show across the street, you know, and we'll have Kevin Kate videos, and Brian Burgess will get in on it, and you know, we'll get some other, you know, we'll sell the tables to the lobbyists or something like that, or, you know, if it's for a good cause. I mean, I just don't want to take away from theirs. I do, again, I think it's like Tiger Bay. It's what you make of it. It's like Capital Steps. It can be really funny. It can be like a roast and everybody get in on it, or it can not be. I would be happy to bring our resources to it. And I think we could. I think you could be in part of it again. I mean, it's like...
Obama's out of office, so I cannot...
They are going to need an Andrew Gillum impression for... You ask what next year's is going to be. It's going to be all 2018, right? They better find an impression of Gwen Graham, John Morgan, Adam Putnam, etc. for next year's press kits.
Yeah. So how's business for you? Everyone's following your brand. They get a lot of news and information. Have you decided what category you fit in now? New media? I'm trying to think of all the things that you've been called. Media mogul?
Son of a bitch. I mean...
Is it journalism? Or?
It's definitely journalism. Like that, you know, and I used to eschew that term, but at this point, that... It's just... I can't resist that at this point. I mean, when, you know, Kevin Cade had the survey that came out and it said, you know, more lawmakers are seeing us or reading us than any other online first site. So if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, I guess it's a duck. It's definitely a lot of opinion. But I think that, you know, but we also do the magazine and all that good stuff. I think I realize my limitations. Like, I think about 10 or 12 people working with me is about where I feel comfortable with. You know, like, I've thought about trying to get bigger and larger, and whenever I get into that, it gets a little tough to manage. Like, I realize that if I wanted to get to the next level, I'm probably going to have to bring in, like, the management level. I would need somebody that's just a assignment managing editor. So that's something that's been popping into my head right now. But I will say, for us, the business, focus on the FloridaPolitics.com brand. Whenever we do that, we succeed. Our emails that we're putting out right now, like, I think that we are really setting the tone on, like, our 60 days email that goes out at night. Like, people seem to really enjoy that. We started the delegation about DC. I see us doing more and more of that kind of product going forward.
What makes a good story for you? How do you select, like, you know, what to cover in a day?
I think things that that are good food fights. You know, that you have a that you have two equal sides battling on it. You know, like, we've followed a process story about what are called the eyeball wars, and it's the battle between the optometrists and the ophthalmologists. And we would not think that that is a major issue to the world, but to the people in this town, there are millions of dollars behind it. There are millions of dollars at stake. So stories like that, stories like Harris Corp versus Motorola over the state law enforcement response system, that is a great story. So those kind of fun process stories, we really try and focus. They basically have to have two parts. They always have to have the little and in there, whiskey and Wheaties, you know, eyeball, you know, ophthalmologist and optometrist. You got to have a good, you know, fight between the two. A good food fight is a great story.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with the publisher of FloridaPolitics.com, Peter Schorsch. Coming up, we discuss the big food fight so far this session, incentives, local control, and we look ahead to the governor's race.
What are the food fights here? The obvious between over the incentives. What do you make of that between Corcoran, particularly, and the governor? And how personal it's gotten?
You know, Corcoran is like the Bluto from Animal House of food fights, because he's always starting them, right? And because he picks a side, you know, and that's black and white creates tension. You know, I look at the incentives battle and I think about the fact that it's really a very small, it's a tempest in a teapot. It is, oh man, that's the glass break in the background. That's going to be perfect on the audio. It's only a couple of hundred millions of dollars going to very wealthy people. This is not Medicaid expansion. This is not class size. It's actually a relatively small issue. And I do think both men, Richard Corcoran and Rick Scott, are expending a lot of capital
on it. In fact, I mean, when you look at it, Joe Negron's Lake Okeechobee land buy plan is a much more substantive issue. That's a now that's a $3.3 billion plan at this point, impacting a lot of people. So I think that you've got to push through. And I think, like, right now, this week, next week, is where some of the more interesting storylines are going to develop, going back to eyeball wars or stand your ground. You know, there's been a variety of tax incentive or taxing issues. There's a battle over, you know, the one of the big sleeper issues is this issue of preemption. You know, the issue of, you know, what can cities regulate? And the legislature wants to make it so that in a variety of issues, whether it be telecom or guns or ride sharing, that, you know, that cities can't create their own rules. And that plays into the whole Trump argument on sanctuary cities and all that. So that's actually, that's going to be, that may be the sleeper issue of this session, is the issue of local government and preemption.
Yeah. And we're seeing that play out in so many ways. How will that settle? Will local governments be able to maintain their control?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, if Richard Corcoran has his way, probably not. You know, but it's, you look at, like, where I'm from, St. Petersburg, which is kind of a liberal city. It wants different rules than Okaloosa County, you know, especially on guns and open carry and on equality, on gay rights, on housing and things like that. And the legislature's saying, no, you don't even get to decide that, which is actually, doesn't that sound anti-Republican? Aren't the Republicans the ones that are supposed to be for local limited government? And here they are saying, no, Mayor Kreisman or City Council X, you don't get to make the rules. We're going to tell you that you can't make the rules.
Everything with regards to Republicans have been, like, turned upside down, it seems.
Yeah.
On the national level,
yes.
Even here on the statewide yes. level, on things that they're supposed to be standing for, you're expecting them to stand for, it's not there. So what's going to end up happening? Are we seeing a new faction of the party coming out, or no?
Well, I mean, I would say that the main battle, ideologically, is between this neo-libertarianism espoused by Richard Corcoran and his adherents, you know, backed up by Americans for Prosperity, and versus a business-friendly, Chamber of Commerce-backed activist government that's, you know, espoused by, like, the Jack Latvalas, the Joe Negron plan. That's, you know, that is a very liberal plan. You know, you're talking about the government buying land from private owners. I mean, that is not what you'd expect from a libertarian like Joe Negron. So that's the big war, and it's playing out at the national level. It's going to play out during the 2018 gubernatorial race, where you've got this neo-libertarian like Corcoran versus a more centrist big business Republican like whoever comes to oppose him, like Adam Putnam. And that's why, like, if you listen to Corcoran last year, you know, for him, free markets are more important than big business. For a long time, people thought that those two things were synonymous, and they're not. And it's very, that's why you see Corcoran supporting things like ride sharing. He doesn't care about taxi cabs. He just doesn't want the government in the regulation business. So that's the driving ideological battle at the root of so many of these legislative food fights.
Are we breaking news here? Is Corcoran officially? Is he, do you think, who are the contenders for 2018 to run, to be 46, run the state of Florida?
I think Richard Corcoran is absolutely running for governor. Not a lot of people know him right now, but, you know, if he puts together this plan that he has done, look at what he's accomplished already. I mean, he has got the lobbying ban in there. He has cleaned the ethics up. You know, he's done a lot already in this first 10 days that he could go and campaign on. So, yes, Corcoran, Putnam. Putnam's raising so much money. Is he the Jeb Bush of the gubernatorial race, where all that money but not a lot of enthusiasm? I still think that the front runner for the nomination is, you know, Billionaire X. There is somebody like Rick Scott out there that is looking at this race and, you know, is deciding how big of a check does he want to cut to enter into the primary. I still like Gwen Graham on the Democratic side.
Although Gillum's making some momentum, getting some endorsements and things like that. I will say, I don't think John Morgan runs. I think John is like the attention. I think he likes moving the debate. But at the end of the day, I don't think John Morgan runs. You know, the other person to really keep an eye on the Democratic side is this guy, Chris King, that has filed and has been quiet. If you look at who is putting money into Florida politics, they are all linked to Chris King. We're going to have more about this in the next month. We're doing some investigating on it right now. But it seems like the national Democratic money that is coming through Stephen Battelle and South Florida, they're naturally allied and already like structurally allied with a lot of the people that are going to work for Chris King. It's going to be a very interesting story.
All right. Anything else that you'd like to add that I didn't ask?
Tramiel, when are you getting up to D.C.? We've launched our email, the delegation. We everybody's focused on Tallahassee, but one of the things that we're doing right now is starting to put a little bit of a focus on what's going on in D.C. There's so many Florida men back and forth up to the nation's capital, so we're excited about that project.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Senators Aaron Bean and Lisbeth Benequisto, as well as Senate President Joe Negron. Also to FloridaPolitics.com publisher Peter Schorsch and Orlando's public radio station, WMFE. Be sure to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, just check us out online at RotundaPodcast.com. Most importantly, join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramiel Gomes.